and conscious business practices are at the forefront of concerns in commerce these days. Amy Hall, Director of Social Consciousness for Eileen Fisher Fashion, came in before all of this was in vogue, and step by step, she came to lead the way it's done. I'm Robin Clare. Stay tuned. This is Tributaries. Amy, thank you for your time today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, Robin.
In this year of 2014, Forbes reported a keen rise in conscious consumerism in the past decade, yet you've been at Eileen Fisher as Director of Social Consciousness for almost double that time. How did you get your start in this field, and did you have a strong personal platform you wanted to work from in order to take on a position like this?
Wow, that's a great question. You know, when I came to Eileen Fisher nearly 21 years ago, jobs like mine hardly existed in the world, let alone in our company, at this company. And so this was a role that I not only grew into, but I also created as time went on. So I was really lucky to be in the company at the right time, when it was still small and it was still trying to kind of grow into the size that the customers felt it was. It was beginning to gain recognition as a brand, and was beginning to have some notoriety out in the world. And I just happened to be there at the beginning when we were starting to offer donations to the community, but we hadn't really organized a process around that. So after pinch hitting for a few years, I became the company's first community relations manager. And then right after that, we made a commitment to our supply chain, to the workers in our supply chain, and needed somebody to develop a program around the human rights in the supply chain. And again, I was in the right place at the right time, and I had the opportunity to step into that role. So my title changed to Manager of Social Accountability. And then as time went on, we layered in our commitment to the environment, and the whole area became known as social consciousness. So I would say that for me, my personal journey in the company is a direct reflection of how the company really tries to respond to each individual's personal interest, personal skill set, and matches that with what the company needs at the time. It was never, my particular role was never, I would say, a career aspiration, because I didn't know about jobs like this when I was, you know, younger than this, basically.
Right.
So I was just really fortunate. And, of course, now that I'm in this role, I can't ask for a better fit for me on a personal level or a professional level.
Sure. I can imagine it's just amazingly fulfilling and exciting to be really in the forefront of this. And it's kind of cool the way you just described it, because you didn't just come in, okay, we need a director of social consciousness, where can we find one, or where can I apply for that job? But you went through many of the aspects of social consciousness and drew them into the company one by one. And I like that. It sounds very, very organic.
Yeah, and I would also add that during that period of time, maybe the first 10 years that I was with the company also drafted its first and only, up to this point, mission statement, which we still abide by. And I really feel that that mission statement articulated the values that it already had. So, in other words, I personally don't feel I brought new values to the company. They were always there, but they had never been articulated. And within the mission statement, social consciousness was one of the four core pillars. So, just in the way that my own personal commitments to the world became articulated through the work I was doing, so did the company's commitments become recognized and articulated through its mission statement.
Yes, I have some friends who started working with corporations, and they had a client that was a huge chemical company, and the company had as part of their mission to lower accidents in their company. And of course, it can be dangerous working with various chemicals. And so they had every year they tried to lower their percentage of injuries as a goal. And when my friends came to work with them, they said, okay, can you tell me the names of the people that you want to be part of this percentage? You know, why don't we shoot for zero? And it worked in a really big way. So it's great to have something like this as a pillar of business. And I'm wondering, I have heard through the grapevine that Elaine Fisher is famous for their work environment. And I'm wondering, how do you measure success within the company regarding this? And is that important?
Yeah, wow. Oh, it's a huge question. Let me think of a way to answer it simply. First of all, I appreciate the recognition for our environmental work. We are very humble about it, and I think we would all agree that we still have so much work to do. And I think the reason we get this recognition is simply because we are a fashion company that has decided to make a commitment to the sustainability of our materials and our practices. And most of the other apparel companies that have made this kind of commitment tend to be in the outdoor industry. So for that reason, we have tended to stand out, but we actually count ourselves among many followers of some of the great outdoor companies that have gone way beyond what we've done so far. We've had a very firm commitment, firm and growing and evolving commitment to the environment, say, for the past 10 years or so. That's not to say we weren't founded with some core nascent commitment. Eileen founded the company with a commitment to natural fibers, such as cotton, wool, silk, etc. And at that time, 30 years ago, this is our 30th anniversary, 2014.
Bravo.
Thank you. It felt like a fabulous commitment. And as time went on, we began to recognize that natural in and of itself isn't sufficient. So we began experimenting with things like recycled plastic water bottles to make fleece, cotton that grows in colors, organic cotton, etc. And that was those attempts and those little experiments were always present all these many years. But I'd say in the past few years, we have really taken a much harder and more serious look at what we're doing. We've really recognized the dire state of the planet and how business is contributing to the demise of natural resources on the planet. And we feel a very, very urgent responsibility to do what we can as a company, not only to lessen our impact, but in whatever way we can to perhaps heal the planet or reverse the impact that we have. So we are just now defining what that means for us and setting some very specific numeric goals, which we haven't always had. So we have measured a few things up to this point, such as the percentage of organic fiber we use or other kinds of so-called eco-fiber. We measure our carbon footprint in certain aspects of our business, but we are actually going to be taking this many steps further in the next couple of years.
Well, I want to hear just for a moment about this cotton that grows in different colors. I've never heard of that.
Well, it's not something we use currently, but it was something we played around with maybe 15 to 18 years ago, and it's called Fox Fiber. There's a farmer named Sally Fox who lives in California, and she's a scientist, and she has devised, and I don't personally know a lot about it, but I know that she's devised a way for cotton to grow in certain colors, greens and browns,
oh,
oranges.
My gosh.
Yeah, and therefore it requires no dyeing. So you can blend them and you can make garments out of those actual colors. The problem for us was that the colors didn't necessarily go with whatever else was on the line at the time.
Right.
So,
we can't lose the fashion sense in all of this.
Exactly. But I think it's a brilliant idea, and I haven't kept up to date on where she is, where she is in the development of that.
Yeah, I want to find her and maybe do a show with her. That sounds quite good.
Should.
I would bet that the farm-to-table mentality is invading all of business practice. Yet, when textiles are involved, they're so geographically specific. How do you work around that and ease the guilt that gets hurled out to everyone in every direction these days?
Wow, you have really touched on, I think, one of the core challenges of the work that we do, which is how do you make a connection, an emotional connection between the customer and the clothing she's wearing, and to the point where she understands the need and the value of organic, just taking organic as one example, but there are many ways that you can define eco materials. And I'll never forget, it was about 7 or 8 years ago when we were doing an Earth Month promotion in our stores, and we were promoting the idea of organic and promoting our organic clothing at that time. There were customers who would come into the stores saying, I don't get it. You already make clothing from natural fibers. What's the difference? So that was, 7 or 8 years ago. I don't think you would hear that today. But I still think that, I was just talking about this with somebody yesterday, a customer is probably more willing to spend a little more money on organic food, something that goes in their bodies, rather than organic clothing, which goes on their bodies. They haven't quite made that leap because it's not so personal. I mean, the idea of organic is something that benefits the community, benefits the shared, the whole population and the health of the land. And because we don't eat our clothing, I think people are still not quite internalizing the value of it. So we're starting to get there, but we have a long way to go.
Yes, yeah. Well, it seems we have reached a critical point in our disposable economy mentality. And so it must be a trick to address that in the fashion industry for a few reasons. Because one, you want to make a well-made product made out of something that is good fiber. And yet, the way the depressed economy is these days, just like you said with organics, are people going to spend a little more to buy something that will last longer? But in this day and age, do you want something? Do people want something that's going to last longer? Because, I don't know. I'm not very trendy with my fashion style, I'm sorry to say.
I'm not either.
I'm kind of basic, but do fashion trends change so much that, someone wants something, I'm just going to wear it one season, and then boom, it's gone. So, and then the cost, of course, comes into it.
Yeah, well, I think that's another great question that really gets at the heart of the conundrum that fashion companies like Eileen Fisher and really all others face. We make fashion, we make clothing. Many people equate fashion with trends and trends with change. And so our duty as a so-called sustainable fashion company is to encourage our customers to think of their clothing as investments. So just like you would buy a car or, a piece of jewelry or something that you would want to last a very long time, we hope that our customers will buy pieces that they love in our stores and that they'll keep them and cherish them and take care of them for many, many years. And I think that many of our customers do look at our clothing that way. I can't tell you how many times I have conversations with people who say, I have a piece in my closet from 18, 20 years ago. I still love it. I just had a conversation like this the other day.
I would agree,
young
yes.
woman. Yeah. But that's not to say we don't get challenged by the cost of our product from probably people who do prefer to shop more frequently. And for that reason, we are, you know, we now have our Green Eileen program where we take back previously worn Eileen Fisher clothing, we clean it, we repair it, and we resell it at a much lower price. It's like new, and people can enter our brand at a much lower price point. And they can get things that they remember from 15, 20 years ago and haven't been able to find. And it's still as good as new, and that also drives home our sustainability message.
That's amazing. That's such a great idea.
Well, it's working. We have a very, very strong response to this.
Oh, cool. And it rhymes. That's great.
Yes.
You know, I have a feeling that you don't really stay focused on the point that Eileen Fisher is a clothing company. It seems that you look into that from that broader perspective of being socially conscious. And I know you're attending a forum at Naropa regarding socially conscious business practices here in Boulder. And I'm wondering if you've attended things like this before, and what are some of the across-the-board business topics and solutions that you've been privy to?
Well, I not having ever attended a Naropa event, I can't say that if I've ever attended anything like it. I tend to go to other kinds of business functions that do attract socially conscious business people.
Like what would
like
be one?
The Social Venture Network, which is one that I've been going to for many years, and a few of us in the company have been connected to. It's a fabulous organization of business leaders that want to leverage their assets for positive social and environmental change in the world. It's a very, very interesting group of people and very inspirational. And I would say that the thing that connects all of us together is that we put the values and the compassion first and the profits second. And like, you know, I'll have to just share with you something that I've heard Eileen say many, many times over the years, which is, if you get the people and product right, the profits will fall into place. And in our case, I feel that that's true, and I think that that's true of many brands out there. They're not willing to compromise their values for the sake of another dollar. Mm. It's really, we are part of a bigger community. We have a responsibility to this planet and to the people on the planet. And we also have the benefit of having assets to invest in the people on the planet. And what can we do on our own, and what can we do together with others to make a difference?
Yes, in being a company that has to work worldwide with either folks that are putting the garments together or going globally to buy the materials. What is your visual, or what is your knowledge perhaps of how, you know, there's the whole sweatshop mentality, and is there a demise to the sweatshops, or how do you see that whole situation? And I'm certainly not suggesting that Eileen Fisher has anything to do with that. I know your company is quite upstanding.
Well, I appreciate that. And I guess I would just start by saying this is an incredibly complex issue. It's something that we've been working on for the better part of 16 years now, 16, 17 years, and we have still quite a lot of work to do in this field. And many of our fellow brands out there are in a very similar boat. You know, it started with a whole trend around auditing and kind of bench, taking the temperature of the factories every so often and understanding what was going on, but really changing the culture and influencing behavior takes a very, very long time.
Yes, it's so true, because we go in with our, it's like going to India with Catholicism or something. You know, there's nothing wrong with either spirituality to many people, but but it's a different language, and our culture is so different, and our expectations are so different. So to go in and shift a factory in another country is a trick.
Yeah, and, you know, when we're not the only brand having a conversation with the factory and putting our product in the factory, the amount of leverage we have is limited. And if we're not in the factory for very long, it's even more limited. But the good thing about Eileen Fisher is that we don't move around from factory to factory. We really build factory relationships over year after year, and many of the factories we use today, most of the factories we use today, we've been with for a number of years. And so we develop a very, not just a friendly connection to them, but almost familial connection to them, to the factory owners and managers, so that there's a sense of trust, there's a sense of mutual concern, mutual caring. We ask a lot of questions of our factories and our suppliers, and certainly in the beginning of any relationship, there's a lot of curiosity about why we're asking so many questions. And as time goes on, they come to learn that even if they give us information that we're not crazy about, such as excessive overtime or maybe not high enough wages or things of that nature, that we're not going to walk away from them. We want to know so that we can figure out together with the factories how to help, how to fix a situation or make it better.
That's so great. Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing about it is that we also have to look inward and look at our own behaviors and say, what are we doing that might be contributing to this situation? Are we not giving them enough lead time to be able to make the clothing in a reasonable amount of hours so that there isn't too much overtime, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? So it's definitely a two-way conversation and a two-way exploration.
Well, that's what is certainly driving a lot of the herb companies, I think, worldwide, and certainly the coffee industry. I mean, that's their big selling point these days, is that we know who we're working with. We work for them. Sometimes it goes generational.
Mm-hmm.
And so we know exactly where the coffee's coming from and who we're working with, and it does become more of a family venture, which is pretty cool. I'm wondering if you have a memorable first compromise. I mean, you just did mention that, you know, well, maybe there is too much overtime here or something like that. Maybe that's the answer already. I don't know.
Well, you know, we're actually embarking on a very, I'd say personally, I think it's very exciting. I don't know how exciting it is to listeners, but this is a very exciting moment in our history as a company, because we have organized internally a series of working groups that are sustainability focused, and they comprise folks from our design area, manufacturing, product development, business planning, etc. And we have recognized together that one of the key leverage points we have in moving our sustainability goals forward has to do with this exact point, which is, how do we relate to the factories? How do we place our orders beginning at the mill level for the fabric, and all the way to when we're placing orders for the finished garments? How much lead time do we give? How many times do we change the orders over the months that follow? How many special orders do we place for special colors, special design tweaks, et cetera, and what kind of stress does this put on the system? And what we've recognized is because we actually are quite good at saying yes and not very good at saying no, we will take all kinds of special orders and make all kinds of concessions and keep changing and keep adding to our orders to the point where we're pushing our factories up against a wall, and they don't have a lot of time to complete the orders. We don't have enough time to put them on the boat to ship them over by sea, which means they get shipped by air, which means our carbon footprint is exorbitant as a company. And so in order for us to actually alleviate our carbon footprint and alleviate the stress that we're putting on our factories and alleviate some of this working hour wage issue and alleviate internal stress in our company, if we can just back up the calendar and maybe even shift how we interact with some of our customers, we can make a huge change in many, many parts of the system, and it all comes down to how we place these orders right from the very beginning. So we have just been recognizing this, and we're putting into place some, I would say at this moment we're in the exploratory phase, really examining what goes on step by step by step internally, and going to be starting to look at how we can shift things. And this is not a simple it's like a domino effect, and of course every little piece involves many, many people and many teams. So this is going to be a multi-year investigation, but it's possibly the biggest, the single biggest intervention that we've undertaken in this realm in terms of sustainability.
Right. I'm wondering at this point how hard it is to keep ahead of the curve. I mean, I feel like once the information is out there, then you can start implementing the steps. And it certainly sounds like you all are there implementing.
Well, we're just now breaking open all the little pieces. So we haven't started making any recommendations or taking corrective action because it's so complicated. But I think the mere fact that we recognize this is huge step forward, and the fact that this whole exploration is being led by a leader in our business planning area and not by somebody necessarily in our manufacturing area or in my area. This is really coming from the heart of the business, and there's tremendous buy-in across all parts of leadership, because if we can kind of crack this nut, it will have many implications for simplifying our processes, et cetera.
And it sounds like the compassion is at the heart of your business, which means it is at the heart of the fashion industry. The other thing I just want to mention in closing is we do have the technology to enjoy the cashmere from Scotland or the alpaca from wherever that comes from, South America. I have no idea. Mm-hmm. But I want us as a world community to be able to share and enjoy what we all have without guilting ourselves to death here in the process.
Well, I agree with that. And, part of the responsibility for the consumer is to ask questions. More brands will start to look inward and raise awareness for themselves around their own supply chains, and they'll take action.
Thanks to Amy Hall, Director of Social Consciousness for Eileen Fisher Fashion, for any guest information. To listen to archives, share resources, and sign up for weekly programming, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. And for podcasting on iTunes, Tributaries Radio. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.